This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at weightwatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and how about that trailer? We finally got the trailer for season 5 of The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, and boy, did it deliver. Truly. You know, there's been a lot of anticipation in the air for this season of Salt Lake, and it's not because of, like, what may or may not happen during the season itself. Like, it's not because, you know, something's made a headline or something's leaked, but it's because of how amazing last season was, how amazing last season ended. And it's sort of like, how can they possibly follow up last season's barn burner of a season, instantly canon finale? Like, we actually pretty much knew nothing about what was going to happen this season, which I think, you know, that's super refreshing. And I think that if that trailer is any indication, the fact that nothing leaked is not a reflection of the fact that this season is boring or is going to give us nothing worth talking about or whatever. Like, nothing leaking was actually a great thing for it. It made the trailer have a bigger impact because it actually did have a lot of substance. A lot of things were going on. A lot of unexpected things happened. So I'm just such an advocate for that kind of thing. I'll talk about that more in today's episode. But yeah, it just looks like this season is going to be a lot of good old interpersonal housewives drama, shifting dynamics, new faces, unexpected alliances, unexpected fallouts. To me, this is what Housewives is about at its core. It's what we expect as fans and viewers of these shows. And there's nobody doing it like Salt Lake right now. There just isn't. Like, this cast is truly unparalleled in its ability to mix it up and to shift its own dynamic. And that is essential for a good cast of Housewives, for a healthy franchise that, you know, can change it up every single season. So today's episode of Gabbing with Gib will be a listener mailbag episode via questions that I collected on social media. But since I posted the prompt yesterday when the trailer came out, there were a lot of submissions about the Salt Lake trailer. So I'll just do a little recap of the trailer and my takeaways from that first, followed by the less compelling but still promising Roni trailer that we got last week. And then I'll jump into some great listener questions that I got about upcoming seasons of these shows, my candid thoughts on the Roni reboot, what I think about Katie on OC so far, the future of Jersey, of course, what I think is working and not working on Housewives overall, former Housewives that I would bring back to each franchise, and more. Okay, so let's jump into the season 5 Real Housewives of Salt Lake City trailer. First of all, if you're listening to this and, you know, weren't on social media yesterday or somehow missed that it came out, pause, go watch it, and come back, because it's truly fantastic. Like, it just, again, it just is such a testament to the health of this franchise, to the power of the core of this cast. So the trailer opens with, you know, these voiceovers with Heather saying to somebody, you know, "You reached out to my sworn enemy. I never thought you would do that." Whitney saying that she sought out proof and got it. I think those two sound bites are related, but I'm not sure. It could be a red herring. I'm not sure. We hear Meredith yelling about people recording them and being disgusted by it. We have Mary yelling that someone is the biggest liar in Utah and they're the biggest fake. I mean, that right there, it's like, okay, shit went down this season. Then we get sort of like the typical, like, lots of fun clips. There's like a lot of theme things happening. We get this great moment where Lisa Barlow goes up to a hostess stand and she's like, "I have a reservation for 8 Lisas." And then they all say, "I love that," in unison. Perfect. They're on Lisa wigs. We have Whitney saying that she loves this new Mary. That's a big part of this trailer, is Mary being so engaged and so in it. We get introduced to Bronwyn, Lisa's friend, who is a new full-time housewife on this cast, effectively replacing Monica. It's pretty crazy that we're getting another Bronwyn as part of Housewives. Like, it's I'd never even heard of that name before Bronwyn from OC, and now we're getting another Bronwyn, spelled differently, but still Bronwyn. Pretty wild. She's wearing these very extra outfits. There's this one outfit that she's wearing, like, walking down the street in downtown Salt Lake City, that's like a two-piece yellow set, midriff bearing, hot pants, jacket. It's sort of like, I mean, listen, I'm not going to judge until we really get to know her and see how these outfits kind of land and during actual filming, but, like, it's bordering on like Chanel Ayon too much in terms of the outfits being like unrealistic for where they're being worn. But we'll see. Heather and her clearly have at it this season. Heather says that Bronwyn is not here to make friends and she doesn't trust her. We see a really emotional moment between Mary and her son, which, you know, I think that's part of the reason why Mary was a friend of last season. She did not show much of her life. And that was probably part of the sort of agreement, honestly. I think she was always going to come back as a friend. But I think it's great that we're going to see more of Mary's life. Mary's very colorful life this season, because when you're full time, you do have a lot of those more personal storyline scenes. So, and I think that her son was involved in something. I'm trying to remember. But her son made some headlines, I feel like, last year. So clearly they're going to talk about that. We get Angie versus Lisa, which felt a little bit inevitable. Like at some point, those two are going to turn against each other in a bigger way, I felt. There's some like questioning of parenting happening. Lisa says that Angie's not being a good friend. And then we get to me what I think is one of the biggest surprises of the trailer. We get Mary versus Meredith, which, you know, if you recall, like Meredith has really been Mary's anchor within this cast. You know, Mary obviously like will kind of say whatever's on her mind. She isn't afraid to burn a bridge or offend people, which I think has made her a lightning rod of a presence on this show. And I think it's refreshing that she'll say whatever, even if it is problematic. That makes her good TV. But we see her and Meredith having these words, and Meredith says, "You used me for 3 years. I got that memo." And then Mary says, "You're not always the victim." In another scene, she kicks her out of her house during a lunch with Meredith in a Breakfast at Tiffany's outfit. So that was definitely not something that I saw coming. I didn't see them turning on each other. Again, I should know better with this group that, like, even if people seem to be kind of solid or to be sort of like, I mean, Meredith to me seemed like Mary's only lifeline in this cast. So for her to turn against her is kind of shocking. You know, it also seems like Meredith and Lisa are back on good terms, which I'm really happy about. I think they work much better as a friend duo than an enemy duo. We see this scene where Meredith is telling Lisa that she should not open up to anybody in this group. And then she turns towards the door, and we see that Whitney and Angie are listening in on their conversation. And she says, "I'm sure she can hear me right now." And it just, you know, Meredith gets, what you realize is that Meredith has some of her best, most iconic moments on cast trips. The rumors, the reality of Auntie's vacation, you know, all that stuff with Lisa when the hot mic moment happened. You know, she has some really... She has some really great moments on vacation, and this looks to be another one. We also get Whitney versus Lisa. They were an unexpected friendship duo. I think it was coming into last season, right? And, you know, it seemed like it was only a matter of time before they had their moments. They had some cracks at the end of last season too. But we see this moment where at that Lisa brunch, where there's, I have a reservation for eight Lisas. She says, "You will never be me. Get that fucking wig off your head," which is so unserious. I love it. She goes up to Justin, Whitney's husband, and says that Whitney's a liar. Whitney says that Lisa built everything she has off the backs of other people. So they're going to be going at it all season. And that's sort of how the trailer ends. My biggest takeaways, again, nobody mixes it up like this cast. It's really incredible how we've basically had like pretty much every single permutation of this group. You know, everyone's been friends with one another. Everyone's had their moments of fighting with one another. And again, I think it never feels super phony or super inauthentic. I think it's just sort of like, now it's just sort of like in their bones to be this way. And it just hits home that like Bravo struck gold with this group. You know, I did see a lot of people bringing up Monica in reaction to this trailer. They were like, you know, the show will be nothing without Monica, or like, because Heather quotes the like her infamous screenshots quote from the finale, which was geared at Monica, and because of the reality of Auntie's thing, people are like, oh my God, they have to use like a Monica quote to like kick things off. Like they're so desperate. It's like, no, like if this trailer is any indication, it's that they don't need Monica for compelling season. And I'll get more into Monica later. I don't think that her time on the show is necessarily totally done. But I think this trailer shows that like they did not need her to make a good season again. If anything, it's proof like these four women have, again, shown us everything. So like, of course they can make a good season. But I do think it was important for them to show us they could without Monica, without Jen Shaw, without some big crime or mystery or split. Like, it does seem like there's this mystery recording that is happening. But like, it feels old school in that it's lower stakes, it's interpersonal drama, it's shifting dynamics. And again, I think it's important for them to show they can make a compelling season, make a great season of Housewives without one of those sort of big calling cards. And it has that sort of rip from the headlines appeal without Monica, because that was a big concern, I think, especially of really big fans of Monica. Like, how will the show be without her? She made such a big impact last season. It seems like the show is going to be fine without her. And same with Jen Shaw. A lot of the first three seasons revolved around Jen Shaw. Even last season, a lot of the things involved Jen Shaw. So it's sort of like they needed to prove this. And again, we have not seen the season yet. We've just seen the trailer, but I think the trailer is really promising in their ability to do that. Again, I was not expecting Mary and Meredith. I'm excited to see Lisa and Meredith getting along. And I think it's just great to see Mary really activated and engaged. Like, that's what it takes to be a full-time housewife, and that's what she's going to give us. So I think it's great that she's back in that role. And again, that sort of quick scene that we saw with her son in the trailer shows us that she is going to be opening up her life. And I think her coming from Meredith shows that she's not just going to like lean on like her pre-existing place in the group. Like, she can also mix it up just like the rest of them. So season 5, Real Housewives of Salt Lake City premieres on Wednesday, September 18th. So very soon. And, you know, it's shaping up to be a good fall, because last week we also got the Roni season 15 trailer. So let's get into that. Okay, so at the beginning, it's everyone getting along and, you know, yada, yada, yada. Like, then we sort of get introduced to Rebecca Minkoff. We have Brynn shading her, saying to her brother that he's probably seen her stuff at Nordstrom Rack. Remind you that Rebecca Minkoff is not going to be a full-time housewife. She will be a friend this season. We have the new housewife, Raquel, and Jenna bonding over shifting from dating men to dating women. And it looks like they get a little flirty, which may ruffle some feathers. We also have Jenna saying that Sai is going to therapy now, but Brynn saying that she sees no growth in her. So TBD on that. There wasn't that much Sai in the trailer, I have to say, which I think is probably a good thing. Maybe points to her cooling it down a little bit. She went a little hard last year. We have a little moment of Jessel and Pavitt talking about like having another kid, and he's like, no more kids. And she's like, what if we have another Beyonce or Elon Musk? And he's like, I don't care about Beyonce, but like, I'd say yes to an Elon Musk, which like, don't love that. There's some drama between Erin and her husband coming. She said that he's been lying to her. She gets really emotional about it while talking to Brynn. And then there's this whole pigeon thing, which like, I don't think it fully lands, because they don't really ever like explain exactly what Uba means by the pigeon thing. I'm assuming she's calling people pigeons because they're being gossips, and that's sort of the implication of the trailer. But for me personally, like, it didn't completely, that's not something like I hear people say in real life. So I was kind of like, is that what she means by that? Like, what exactly? And it just said so many times in the trailer that like, I think they should have almost like defined it for if they were going to use so much of that in a 3-minute trailer. In that sort of montage, we get Erin saying, I didn't say she was poor, which feels an absolute scandal that Erin would be involved in, which is perfect. We have Brynn asking Rebecca Minkoff about Scientology, and she says, like, if anybody asks about it, just say no comment. So like, that combined with the fact that Sai had that hot mic moment at Jeff Lewis Live saying that Rebecca Minkoff has been boring, I'm not sure we'll get much of the Scientology stuff, which I think is unfortunate. And then sort of in that pigeon montage, we have, I mean, it seems like they're implying that Rebecca Minkoff got pregnant after a wild night out with some other random person. And she confronts Jessel over spreading that news. But like, I checked Rebecca Minkoff's Instagram and it doesn't seem like she's ever posted a pregnancy announcement. So I'm not sure what that was all about, or if that's, again, sort of a red herring. I'm not sure. There's clearly more to that story. Then we get sort of, I think, what's sort of the most compelling classic Housewives thing about this trailer, which is Brynn versus Uba. They had this fight, which seems to be on one of their trips, where Brynn's like, you're not Naomi, you're not Giselle. And then Uba's like, well, Naomi and Giselle wish. And then Brynn saying, I sucked a dick to get a job. She's delusional. She models for Dress Barn, which is honestly, listen, it's shady. It's lowdown. But you know what? That's what this show needs more of. It needs more of that cutting low stakes drama that we're used to on Housewives, with like the good lines and the good reads. And I think Brynn has the best ability to do that. So I'm glad we're getting at least some of that this season from them. And then it ends with Brynn saying, like, it's very Staten Island. And Erin saying, don't call me Staten Island. I'm a born and raised city person. Again, like, they need more of that kind of stuff. So that's kind of the full trailer. I think that it's promising. I think it's a solid trailer. But I think when you compare it to like the Salt Lake City trailer, it's sort of like, okay, that's a little bit night and day in terms of which one is going to get you more excited for a show. And I think that there's a lot riding on the second season of the Roni reboot. I think they need to deliver a good season. And I'm not saying that they're not going to via this trailer, but it gets me excited. I'm excited about the season of Roni, but there's something missing from it still, I think, from this trailer. All right, so let's get into the listener mailbag questions. Okay, so speaking of the Roni reboot, FillItUp04 on Instagram asked, do you genuinely think the Roni reboot was good? I feel like Bravo is trying to force it still. So I wouldn't say that Bravo's trying to force it. I mean, it's happening. Roni Legacy is not happening. You might feel like the marketing is really in your face or whatever, but you can't blame them for wanting the show to succeed. They took a really big swing. They did find a group of women that has some stars in it and has potential. But yeah, but anyway, so do I genuinely think it's good? I think it's good, but I don't think it's great yet. That's really what I think about it. I think last season was hampered by a few things. One, there was the uneven intro because of the Lizzie Savetsky scandal where she was fired for being racist. And so they basically cut out a lot of the early footage. And what that did was it made the first couple episodes feel weird because these women didn't really know each other before. But then in the first couple episodes, they were talking about some drama they've had in the recent past because they'd already been filming together, but we didn't see any of that footage. So it sort of felt like we just like jumped in with all of them and maybe missed some intro scenes. So that did not help at the beginning of it. I also think that what didn't help was that Uba, Brynn, and Jenna weren't always around. I think some of them got COVID during filming, if I remember correctly. But because of that, it was left up to Sai, Aaron, and Jessel to carry the bulk of the drama, which ended up being really repetitive and didn't do Sai and Aaron any favors because it resulted in them feeling like mean girls, kind of, especially Sai. And then that sours fans on her because of that. So it was sort of like this cycle of like, some of the women weren't present, so the other ones had to carry the burden, but they only had like this one dynamic that kept repeating, which was like Sai and Aaron sort of picking on Jessel, and then Jessel became the fan favorite, partially for that reason, partially because she just kind of is who she is, and she's sort of unintentionally funny. But I also think that she was endeared to the audience because of this dynamic. And then because that was repetitive and they came off as the mean girls, the fans didn't like her, and that also contributes to the fans not liking the show. It's a cycle. I really do think that. And I've obviously spoken about this before, but they should have also figured out Roni Legacy before announcing the reboot. That was the cardinal original sin, however you want to say it. That would have alleviated so many concerns from fans about what they were doing with our favorites, with our OG Roni women. But they didn't figure that out. And then it also doesn't help that Roni Legacy got fucked over, allegedly, because of Jill and her going public with the fact that the salary negotiations were being stalled because she wanted favored nations, meaning they were all going to be paid the same. But the women who were coming back and had been on original Roni for way longer than her, for over 10 years, wanted to be paid more. That's apparently what happened. That's the impression that I've always gotten. So that doesn't help things either, because that puts a sour taste in fans' mouth. And the kind of, I think there is a contingent of viewers who will never fully accept this reboot because of that. But yeah, so I don't, I think the reboot is good. It has potential, but I don't think it's top tier Housewives yet. It's not even close. Again, if you compare it to the first season of Salt Lake, if you compare last season of the Roni reboot to the first season of Salt Lake, it's night and day in terms of what it gave, really. But I did enjoy the first season of the reboot more than season one in Dubai. So it's somewhere in the middle, and again, maybe that's not the best place to be. I think you want people to feel passionately about the show one way or the other. And I don't think that passion is there, at least for the online audience. And I will say, at BravoCon last year, the audience for the Roni reboot was really engaged. The room was overflowing. That was actually a big takeaway that I had from BravoCon last year. That was sort of a surprise to me, that like how much the people loved those women. I mean, Brynn was a breakout star of BravoCon. And I think that clearly there's a growing feeling with these women, but it's not there yet. But I do think the casting is pretty damn good. I think they all bring something to the group. To me, Brynn and Aaron are very, very good at being housewives. I think they have potential to take it up a notch or two, but I think they definitely have it in them. And the trailer does make it seem, though, that they're kind of getting even better at it. I also think another issue with it is that some of them have their guards up and they've created these boundaries that are going to hurt the show and don't bode well for having a long tenure as a housewife. I hope I'm wrong about that. But if you think about somebody like Jen Pedranti on OC, this is her second season. We already know so much about her life. She opens up so much. She has a kind of like warts and all kind of approach to showing her life on TV, good, bad, and the ugly. And I don't really think that a lot of the women on the New York cast have that mentality. I mean, Jenna doesn't have to show her relationship. Uba didn't have to talk about her mystery man last year. And she created that boundary. And I think that that's really unfortunate. And I think that that's, again, I don't think that's a really smart move. I also think they're all very aware of the fact that they're filming Housewives, which is the same as a lot of the newer other franchises like Salt Lake and Dubai. But on Salt Lake, they lean into the campiness of it. They lean into the high stakes sort of tear it all down approach to drama. I don't know if the Roni women are on that same page. It kind of feels like they're all protecting something, which is fine, I guess, but it also kind of goes against part of what Housewives is about, which is sharing your life on camera. And I think that not they, to me, feel the most like scared to come off not great, to come off unlikable, but like by covering up parts of their life, they're kind of shooting themselves in the foot. So I like the Roni reboot. I think it has a lot of potential. I'm excited for the second season, but I don't think it's there yet. There's something missing still for me. And it's a couple of those things I just talked about. William Marshall on Instagram asks, which season of Housewives that we have coming up are you most excited about? Undoubtedly Salt Lake City. I've been missing them since January, since the last season ended. They have a huge moment to follow up with, which I think is always an opportunity to prove yourself. And again, particularly because a lot of people seem to be thinking that they need Monica or they need Jen Shah or they need a big crime or they need a big scandal to deliver a good season on this show because they've had one of those elements for the first four seasons. This is their opportunity to prove they don't need that. And I think they're going to rise to the occasion. The trailer makes it look like they did. I'm also really intrigued by Atlanta. I'm really intrigued by Potomac, but I'm also excited for Salt Lake City. Friend of the pod, Kendrick Tucker, shout out, great podcast called I Cannot. I have to have Kendrick back on this show. He asked, how will next season of Real Housewives of Atlanta be structured? Will Kenya be included? Phaedra joining halfway, how's that going to work? So, obviously, I wish I knew more about this. Atlanta is one of those franchises that's been filming that we haven't heard a ton about outside of the Kenya thing, obviously. But I did some searching on social media, and it looks like Atlanta actually filmed their finale event over the weekend. So I don't think it's going to be like an uber extended filming situation to account for Phaedra joining the show so late in the filming process. I do not know how that's going to work. It seems, I mean, my guess is that she's obviously full time. You know, the announcement said she's getting her peach back, but unless they do like a lot of pickup scenes where they can put a lot of her solo scenes sort of like earlier in the season, I bet you we get like a big entrance halfway through, basically, and we just get a lot of her in the second half, and she's just made full time. It's kind of a situation that I don't think we've ever had, at least for a long time. I can't recall a moment when somebody joined so late into a season. I also don't see how, given that it's not like they filmed for like months and months and months more. Like they just filmed, Phaedra only joined like a month and a half ago. So I don't see how they can completely cut around Kenya without fucking up the narrative. I mean, like I just talked about with Roni, like if they cut out Kenya, how do they have continuity in so many storylines? And I'm sure like Portia's entrance, I'm guessing it's probably like, I bet you her first scene is with Kenya, you know? So it's sort of like, I don't see how they can completely cut Kenya out. I know a lot of people have said they think they will. And I think I've said that before, but now that I think about it, I don't know why, but why is my inclination that they'll include some of her? And I actually think that it would be smart if they did. I think that like, if they included Kenya in the first half of the season and they make the editing around what happened at her hair event where she allegedly showed those pictures of the newbie, I think it would actually create a big moment if they didn't ignore it. It would break the fourth wall a little bit, of course, but I also think it would give Atlanta a really intriguing and compelling event that will get people to tune in to like see how Bravo handles it and edits it. Like, I think that this is a moment actually where like if Bravo completely ignores what happens with Kenya, when we all know what happened with Kenya, it could create some bad blood with the viewership, especially since Atlanta, you know, this is a big season for Atlanta to prove that it can get back to its former glory and to be in good form again. And I don't know, I think it would be actually really smart for them to embrace what happened and to like, you know, basically say that Kenya crossed a line and whatever, but like they could make it a really dramatic moment and be kind of really integral to the trailer for the season, all that. Like that might be wishful thinking, but that is what I would like to happen. I don't think it's completely off the table for that to happen. That being said, if Kenya ends up suing them, which I don't think we've heard an update about that in a while, I think they will cut around all of it because then it obviously becomes a legal matter. Lou Loves Bravo on Twitter asks, what have you heard about the upcoming season of The Real Housewives of Potomac? Everyone is tight-lipped and not even asking Andy about it in the press. Nothing. I don't know anything about that either. Like, it's, again, this is kind of the theme of the episode, I guess, like people being tight-lipped about production and kind of how that builds anticipation or hurts anticipation for a season. I think with Potomac, it's making me super intrigued for it. I was just at a recent event with a bunch of peers in this space, other podcasters, sort of Bravo creators, and none of us have heard anything about Potomac. It's not just me. There was that one video that, you know, showed Giselle and Wendy at, I think maybe like Wendy's birthday party or some party earlier in the filming where they were hugging and getting along and dancing together. But other than that, I'm pretty much in the dark. Again, I think it's a great thing. Last season was rough for Potomac, and I think it was overshadowed by that fight at the end that got very physical, and that footage got out right when it happened. And I think that that just sort of like, that's not why the season was bad, but I don't think it helped the season that that had leaked. And that's just not the kind of thing that like you want to get out about a season or you want to even happen in a season. So I think some read nothing leaking, meaning that a season will be boring. But I, as I said, I think it can be a really positive thing for a season of Real Housewives. There's power in few things being leaked. So hopefully this is not an overcorrection, but I am cautiously optimistic about the season of Potomac. Okay, what about Ken on Threads asks, what do you currently think is something Real Housewives is doing right that they don't get enough credit for? And what do you think they're doing wrong that Bravo should consider retooling? I guess a lot of the questions and answers are going to be about this, but I think that cracking down on leaks is something they're doing right. I think, you know, Housewives is on such a roll of having these big moments where, you know, we had the Erica Jane, we had the Jen Shaw, we had Reality Von Teese, we had Ashley's divorce, we had Kathy Hilton and Lisa Rinna and Aspen, we had Lisa Hochstein's divorce, and it was going on this slippery slope that fans would expect something that big every single season. And if something big like that did not happen, we'd actually kind of feel let down when we didn't get that. But I also think it was creating pressure on the women themselves to create moments if, you know, those big things were not naturally happening, which is definitely not good for the authenticity of these shows. Like, I mean, I even think about the whole Kenya situation. It's like, I think it's clear that Kenya took things too far, whether you think that she deserved to be suspended or you know, she should have exited the show for what she did is up to you. But like, I think that what she did was kind of born out of a pressure to deliver a big moment for a show. Again, a struggling franchise. It hasn't had a big moment in a while. The Drew divorce thing didn't really deliver. And so Kenya, you know, here she is. She's co-headlining this new seat, this kind of newly revamped show. Portia's back. Let's give people a big moment. She shows these allegedly pornographic photos of the new addition to the show on screen at an event. And like, I don't think the women should feel that pressure because that it's just like inauthentic, you know? And like, I think these shows are heightened reality, but they shouldn't cross that line into manufactured moments, or at least they shouldn't come across that way. So I think it's an all around great thing to maintain mystery around a season before it airs, because that helps to sort of change the expectations and shows that sometimes old school housewives infighting and friendship drama and kind of things happening in their personal lives is enough to create a fantastic season of a show. I mean, I guess I can't really point to OC and say that, because part of the appeal of OC this season has been, you know, the aftermath of Shannon's DUI, the Alexis Bellino and John Jansen of it all. But I do think that some of the things within this season that we didn't know about, like Gina and Travis, we didn't really know much about the Jennifer Bertrandi stuff. We didn't really know about Katie and Heather, or some of these little things that like are also still delivering and sort of helping this show have such a great season. So that's sort of something I think should be embraced and celebrated more. The other trend that I really like is the quicker turnaround on some of these seasons that feels like we're getting. OC, New York, Salt Lake, those feel like the turnaround times from filming to airing were shorter than usual, I want to say. Again, I'm not going to go back and compare timelines to confirm that that's accurate. It might be inaccurate, but it feels that way. And I think that that's going to get more and more important as social media and leaks continue to impact these shows. They have to turn them around quicker. They can't always rely on, you know, picking cameras back up to kind of like capture some of these bigger moments. Like, I think they just have to work on turning these seasons around more quickly. You know, Dubai is an obvious exception to that. And I think that was a huge misstep for Bravo. I think that that hurt the franchise's chances of ever fully catching on with a broader fan base. But I think generally a quicker turnaround feels like a good trend. And I hope that that continues. And then I'll say a couple things that I don't love. This is a smaller. I don't love how often and how many we get clips ahead of episodes. I don't like feeling like we've seen or we could have seen all the important stuff before an episode even airs. I think that, you know, obviously they do need to put promo clips out, but there's a balance there. And I kind of sometimes feel like the balance is a little bit off in terms of how much we get ahead of an episode airing. I don't like whatever is happening in down in Miami. I think that show is absolutely not broken. We've missed so many major moments in that cast's life this year because the cameras have not been up. And I just feel like that decision to apparently pause production and, according to one report, tinker with the cast, like, it came amid this era of that happening on Atlanta. It just happened on New York. People wanted it to happen on Potomac, but it didn't end up happening on Potomac. I don't know why what's happening in Miami is happening in Miami, but I don't like it. I think it's a mistake. I don't love that different franchises seem to have different expectations when it comes to sharing their full lives on camera. I think that Jenna Lyons has been allowed to get away with in not showing her relationship and speaking about that being an approved decision in an interview with the New York Times. I think that that should not be allowed. I think it's unfair. Any other housewife can now point to that and say, well, why do I have to share XYZ if Jenna Lyons got the okay from the network to hide her relationship and still keep her apple? You know, compare that to the pressure on somebody like Kyle Richards to share her life, on, you know, on Rob and on Potomac to share that scandal, on Shannon Bedore and the OC to share everything that's going on with her. Like, I think it's good that all those women feel that pressure when there's things going on in their lives. And I think it's important to have that there. That this is part of the job. Part of the job is you're agreeing on the dotted line to share your life and, you know, again, warts and all. And I think everyone should be held to that same standard. And I think that different franchises and different people being held to different standards based on maybe like who they are, that's a weird precedent to set, I think. I mean, again, Uba last season, she didn't have to share. She had a mystery man. And like, we've had mystery men over the years, but I was hoping that Jenna Lyons not showing her relationship on this season, I was hoping that the women would call her out about that. There is a shot of her engagement ring and a mention of her engagement ring in the trailer, so maybe they will call her out for that, but it's not teased that much. So I'm not sure they will do that. Because that franchise has their guard up in some ways. And then the last thing isn't really necessarily a thing that Bravo's doing. I think it's a thing that Housewives are doing that is informed by a thing the fans are doing. Being well-liked on these shows is overrated. I really do think that, but I also get why the Housewives want to be liked, because fans have basically lost their ability to respect villains. Like, I think we tend to dislike these people who are ruffling feathers and saying unpopular things and getting the pot stirred. But that's so important for shows. It's so important for these quote unquote villain characters to exist, to make sure the shows have conflict and make sure that women are addressing things, even if it's awkward, even if it's a little bit jarring, even if it's confrontational in a way that can be inappropriate. Like, that's important. These shows need that. And with that being said, like, I think the amount of like vitriol that's being addressed towards Tamra is a little bit overkill, I think. Like, obviously, she has been very harsh on Shannon, and I think she should give her more of a break. I think sometimes she's obviously overstepping, but also, like, she is bringing things up. Like, if she wasn't the one who was calling Shannon out, I don't know if anybody else would be, and we'd be getting a very different season. So, and, like, obviously, okay, yeah, it's obviously a fine line and whatever, but, you know, I think that it's sort of this, again, it's sort of this cycle of, like, you know, fans are reacting badly these days to, you know, a villain character, which makes the women feel hate, which then affects how they act on camera because they don't want to feel that hate anymore and they don't want to be disliked. So that's also an issue that I don't love, a trend that I'm not loving. Xavier Andrews on Instagram asked, what do you make of the seemingly growing phenomenon where we see what to appear to be important scenes in a trailer only to have them cut from the season? It happened with the Teresa Louis scene this year on Real Housewives in New Jersey. There are also a lot of infamous examples like Dorinda yelling at somebody on the phone in Miami season 11 of Roni. Obviously, some things are just cut for time, but what do you make of these seemingly more consequential scenes that are cut? So this is a really good question. I think I want to like reach out to a couple of producers that I know and see what they have to say about this. So I might loop back on this in the next mailbag. But Xavier is referring to a scene that we saw on the initial trailer for Jersey where it's Louis and Teresa seemingly with a producer of the show, sort of a fourth wall breaking moment where he says he wants to be better. And there's also another scene from that trailer that was cut, a quick moment of Joe Bonino on the phone with Margaret saying that Louis pissed all of Teresa's money away. That was never shown in the season. And a couple other recent examples, Crystal last season on Beverly Hills, there's a scene of her defending Garcelle that was cut. I think it was then used as a flashback, a quick flashback, but the actual scene itself was mostly cut from the show. And there's also a scene from the trailer that season where she says, this group wants me to scream all the fucking time. And I don't think that was in the show. And then we also, a couple seasons ago on Salt Lake, we had Dana coming after Jen Shaw, and that was from the finale of that season, but we never saw it within the season. It was just in the trailer. It's an ongoing list, but those are a lot of recent examples of this happening. Some we end up seeing on like an ever before seen edition of the episodes or the extended versions or the bonus footage episodes at the end of the seasons. But some of these we never get to see, and we never have an explanation for why we don't. Part of it, I think, is because trailers are cut before the entire seasons are cut and those edits are not locked up. And I think that edits low key change like up until pretty close to an episode airing, sometimes like a week before. And, you know, some of these examples feel like they're from storylines that maybe just weren't able to be brought to fruition to sort of make their inclusion in the ultimate season make sense. Again, these are only 42-minute episodes, and there are sometimes upwards of 9 women whose stories need to be told. So they do cut things for time. I don't think all of these are necessarily because of that. Like, for example, like the Louis Teresa thing being cut and Margaret on the phone with Joe being cut, those feel like they could have been connected to the same storyline of like Louis spending Teresa's money or stuff going on with Teresa and Louis, whatever it's alluding to. But to me, like, that's a really interesting and compelling thing for audiences to see. And I think a lot of people would have liked to see those kind of things. But I also wonder, I mean, you have to wonder that like showing stuff like that could have ruffled feathers with Louis and the network, or it could have become a legal thing, or it could have stoked the flames in this heated situation even more. And it's a situation, as we all know, that Bravo clearly wants to move past. So that's one way to read it. But I think that like the Crystal examples are kind of some of those examples where it's sort of like, those are part of a tough edit that she got last season where she was barely included in the first parts of the season. And then I think the Dana thing like feels like it's probably more about a storyline thing more than anything. She was kind of a side character. She's a friend of who didn't have like a primary storyline. So I think that her, you know, coming for Jen so hard in that finale, maybe it would have needed some like warm-up scenes, honestly, to make that moment make sense. I don't know. But I think overall, like, it's kind of a bad precedent to set. And there's no question about that, because even if you're Bravo, even if you're just thinking as Bravo in terms of like protection, it's sort of like, you know, showing us those scenes and then not showing them in the season, it stokes the flames of fans who are a little bit more conspiracy-minded, which, again, doesn't do the network any favor. So I'm actually surprised that they let these moments happen so often these days. Because it's not like they're forgettable solo scenes being cut. Like, these are like, you know, again, as you said, as the question said, like seemingly pivotal scenes, almost always sort of like tense or explosive. Or there's a reason why fans remember seeing them in the trailers, right? So not seeing them in the seasons is like pretty apparent and pretty blatant. So I'm just surprised it happened so much. But I think I'm going to loop back on that. I'm going to try to like DM a couple people and see if they'll just generally let me know like sort of what that's indicative of. Allie and Raleigh on Instagram asks, what are my thoughts on Katie on the OC so far? Coming so hard for Heather as an intro strategy is strange. So I do think that Katie is doing a little too much. And I think that making her entire presence on the show about creating this sort of like one-sided feud with Heather based on a storyline that was from last season, a season that she wasn't even on, no less, is not smart. I think that somebody advised her incorrectly. It's very much similar to what torpedoed NECA's time on Potomac last season. Recall, like, she spent her entire first half plus of her first season as a housewife. She spent that entire time in this confusing feud with Wendy. And it obviously did not help that Wendy kind of refused to move forward with her at all, didn't really want to engage in it or give her the time of day. And even though she made up some ground in the back half of that season, it wasn't enough. She had already kind of dug this hole too deep for herself, and she ended up not getting asked back for another season. And it's unfortunate because I think that women feel like they need to come in hot out of the gates to prove themselves, but I actually would much rather see somebody new come in, show us who they are, introduce us to their family, tell us their backstory, prove they're real friends, at least some of the women, and then have something more organically happen between them and a castmate. So like with Katie, if she had come in as Gina's friend, shown us her unusual family setup, introduced us to her business, which I don't even think we've really heard much about, and then butted heads with Heather in a way that happened at a group event or at a dinner or something, it would have been much better received. But as it stands, it feels like she came in with an agenda. She had done her homework. She texted this paparazzi guy and sat on this information until the correct moment. But even then, the correct moment was weird because like it was her event that she was hosting, and she like got this hot dog specifically for Heather just to like bring this up. It felt kind of bizarre. And even if that's not exactly how it went down, even though it sounds like it kind of was, that's how it's coming across. And it sucks because I actually think that she has more to offer than this. I think she has more to offer than NECA did. And I think that she's been slapped with this Noella 1.5 label, which I actually personally feel like doesn't really capture who she is, but it does feel like it does because of what we've seen on the show so far, if that makes sense. Again, I don't think it's too far gone for Katie. I think there's a chance for her to reel it back in, but she has to pivot. It depends on how long this paparazzi thing gets dragged out, really, because again, it's weird. It's from last season. It feels like she came with an agenda. And the longer it goes on, the worse it will be for her. So again, I hope she can pivot and I hope that she can, you know, change course before it's too late. Natalie Chapman on Instagram asks, what should they do about the Real Housewives of New Jersey? Ah, it's a $1 million question. I do think it's too early for them to make any decisions. But if I were an executive at Bravo and I was being forced to decide right now, this is what I would do. I would give Teresa and her family a spinoff, which gives her an out from the show. It creates a more like protected environment for the network to deal with Louie and all that. And it also just keeps her on the network, which I think is probably important. But then I would bring Dolores, Melissa, Margaret, and Danielle back full time. I would bring Fessler back as a friend and maybe make Rachel Fuda a friend. I think her husband got too involved last year. She's pregnant. I do think there should be more spots for new women on the show. So then I would bring in three new women full time. I do think that at least one of those should feel a little stunt casty. So like maybe that's Danielle's sister-in-law. Maybe that's bringing Kathy back, even though Kathy wasn't a great housewife, I don't think, but she does clearly have an issue with Melissa. She moved across the street from her. She was really shady about Melissa on Watch What Happens Live. And I think a returning face always sort of like checks that box of familiarity. And it seems like bringing Caroline or Dina or Jacqueline back wouldn't really work because they don't live in New York or they've sued the network or for a variety of issues. Maybe you even just bring Kathy back as a friend and then you have two to three other full-time women. I'm just spitballing here at this point, but like you get what I would be going for, right? I don't think that it needs a Roni style reboot. And I also don't think that like the Roni reboot is a smashing success yet. I think that's still like a slightly unproven approach to fixing a Housewives franchise. So I think the OC route, what we're seeing this season and partially last season with bringing some new people in, with bringing some old favorites back, I think that's a more tenable and proven way to write a franchise. That's sort of what we're going to see on Atlanta this coming season. So I think that feels the most promising. So yeah, that's what I would do. I really hope they don't make a decision really soon. I hope they let it sit and let the temperature come down, but that's what I would do if I decide right now. Kristen Howcroft on Instagram asks, what is the possibility of the current Real Housewives of New Jersey cast doing an Ultimate Girls Trip and then a refresh to the cast? I mean, no chance. I do hope that we get more girls trips, as I've expressed several times on this show. I feel like I heard from someone somewhere that Andy said that there are ideas being floated around about the future of that show. So hopefully it's not as dead in the water as it seems. But this Jersey cast going away together, especially considering like how much of a sign it was that Berkshire's house burned down that they were supposed to go to. Yeah, that's not going to happen. Okay, two more questions. John Conahan on Instagram asks, if I could bring back one former housewife back to each franchise, who would it be? And he said to exclude Dubai. Obviously, I mean, there's only one person to bring back and that's Nina. And even though she is connected to the group, she was kind of a boring housewife, so I would not bring her back. Okay, so let's go alphabetically. On Atlanta, I would have said Phaedra before, and she's coming back. So that would have been my answer. Obviously, in a dream world, Nene would come back, but that's never going to happen because of all the legal stuff that she's involved with. And, you know, I feel like she just really did burn that bridge. But again, I hope I'm wrong. I hope never say never, but Nene would be my vote for Atlanta. Beverly Hills. I know that Carlos King famously said that he would bring back Teddy to Beverly Hills. And I think he made a point, but if I had it my way, I would bring back Camille Grammer or Eileen Davidson. Eileen, because I actually really liked her. I think she was a great steady presence. She actually had her moments of confrontation. And I think that she was actually a really good foil for Rinna. So I wonder, I mean, now I'm just like spitballing again, but like, what if like eventually they take Rinna off pause and they bring back Eileen Davidson at the same time? Because again, they kind of worked well together. I think that Eileen provided like a nice balance for Rinna and checked her a little bit. So that could be kind of interesting. And then Camille, just because I think that like she's good at being a housewife and I think that she's hungry for it. And I don't think she's too thirsty. And I think that like, you know, last year and the year before, a lot of people wanted Denise to come back. But obviously last season when she came back, it kind of flopped because I don't think that Denise ended up being like that amazing of a housewife. But Camille's good. And so I think that Camille would have it in her to sort of like make an impact. On Miami, I would bring back Anna. Even though I think that she's a little bit divisive, I think that she has a real connection to this cast. She's She was on the show's early seasons. And if so, she could tone down some of the thirst level. I think that she could be kind of an interesting addition to the show. On New Jersey, that's the hardest one. I mean, just going to lob it up there. What if you brought back Danielle as a friend? Who knows? I mean, it would create so much chaos. I'm sure the women would never want to film with her, but she's just so watchable. She's so chaotic, and I love it. On New York, I would, you know, I don't know if any of the OG women would really work on the reboot. I would obviously love to see a lot of the OG women on something, but if I was to bring somebody back to the reboot cast from the original who would actually work, I would bring back Tinsley. I think that, again, I think I've said this before, but I think that Tinsley's time on the show was, I think she cut it too short for the Coupon Cabin King or whatever the fuck his name was. And it didn't work out for her. And she's happily married to somebody new and she seems really happy. But in a dream world, Tinsley would be back on The Real Housewives of New York. Orange County, I would bring back Vicky. Come on. I mean, even that little moment that she popped up at the dinner party a couple weeks ago, it was great. I'm sorry. Like, I don't think I would ever need her full time again. But if she was like a really involved friend of who was at a lot of the group events, I would love to see that. Potomac, Monique, hands down. I she's expressed several times over the years that she does not want to do that. But I just think that she was a great housewife. I think that it ended unfortunately for her, but she was really good at what she was doing for quite some time. And then on Salt Lake, I would bring back Monica, but I would bring her back in like season 7. So we would have season 5, which is about to air. I think I would give them one more season without her. And then I think by season 7, things would open up. Maybe one of the OG women would not be around anymore. Who knows? I hope that's not true. But like, I think things would either settle enough or change enough to give Monica an opening back in. But she also keeps running her mouth in a way that I bet the network doesn't like. So I don't know if that's ever a possibility. But again, I was asked if I could bring back one former housewife, who would it be? That's who I would bring back eventually. Okay, then last question. Nick White, a friend of the pod on Instagram, asks, what reality shows do you think reality stars watch besides their own? Such a fun little question. It's funny because I feel like there are people who don't even watch their own shows. Like, we know Ariana Maddox last season did not watch Vanderpump Rules. Teresa famously doesn't really watch Real Housewives of New Jersey. But I feel like a lot of housewives in general don't watch that much TV overall. Like, that's the impression that I get. There are some who pretty much watch all the other housewives, like Whitney and Heather on Salt Lake, Tamra, Margaret Josephs, Alexia from Miami, Chanel Ayan. I think some of the New York cast, I think they all watch like a lot of the housewives. Lala and Sheena, I think they watch a lot. Ariana, she was famously obsessed with Love Island, obviously, and then she ended up becoming the host of the US version. I think a lot of the people with podcasts watch a lot of reality TV because it gives them something to talk about, especially other Bravo shows. Though I don't think that any of the podcasts focus as much on Bravo as Two T's in a Pod does. I also randomly know that like Chriselle from Selling Sunset loves Bravo, but I feel like I don't pay enough attention to other reality stars outside of Bravo to like really answer that question in an accurate way. I think we get some clues about that on Traitors, on a show like Traitors, where we have the crossover moment. So like, I know Trishelle, who won last season of the Traitors, she watches a lot of Bravo, and that's why she like loved Phaedra and some of the other Bravo ladies. But then you have like other ones who I think just like kind of keep to their silos and like really only pay attention to the shows that they've been on. But yeah, I bet that like a lot of, if anybody's watching like widely watched TV shows, like I think that like Kim Kardashian has watched Love is Blind before. I think that she posts about that sometimes on her story. I bet you like if they watch something, it's the big Netflix ones, right? It's Love is Blind. It's The Ultimatum. It's Perfect Match. It's all those kind of shows. I think that like a lot of people generally watch. But yeah, that's a fun question to end on. So thank you to everyone who submitted questions for this listener mailbag episode. We'll be back on Friday with a fun interview. We haven't done an interview in a while on the show. It's been a little bit of a dry interview summer, but we have an interview coming on Friday's show. So we'll see you then. Thanks for listening. Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes. And subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gib Sonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest bookings, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.